Hey everyone, and welcome back to our Lion Knight discussion. We're going to be talking about the Beowulf movie today, and I'm Ryan. And with us today, we have Max. Go ahead and
hello.
Say
hello.
Eric.
Hi.
Tony Maloney.
Hello.
Marcus.
Howdy.
And Jamie.
Hello.
And well, to get started, do we want to recap the movie, like give a brief summary, or do we just want to get right into it?
I think it'd be best if we almost just got right into it. We can give the context that we watched the Beowulf movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple plot as well. It's kind of short overall. Yeah, yeah.
To anyone who's listening and hasn't heard of Beowulf, maybe check that out. But I'm sure everyone's heard of
it. Yeah. Yeah, so we've actually all read the Beowulf book as well ahead of time.
Yeah, which movie is basically the same, right? Except, like, the dragon's his son.
Well,
except not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of the characters are pretty far off, or, you know, Beowulf, and then obviously, the king.
Yeah, I have to assume they were trying not to get the characters on Mark.
It's a clear choice. I don't.
Right. They were really.
It's kind of hard to get from Beowulf, you know.
Yeah, and I kind of wondered why, honestly. Like watching the movie, I was like, why did they make the characters different? Because it didn't seem like, at least in the movie, it didn't seem like there was any substance to it. And it was the same thing with like the whole Christianity subplot thing. I thought, talk about that. But like in the movie, there's multiple scenes where it's like, shows Christianity, the bad people, like the conniving people are the Christians. And then the dragon attacks, there's a burning cross that falls down and all this stuff. But it seemed really half-baked. Honestly, it kind of seemed almost to me like they had more about it and then had to cut it, because it just seemed really weird that they were including all these like Christian motifs. And to do anything with
it. It really feels super mishmashy, and I think picking up on that while we were watching it, where we were like, oh dude, it feels like Lancelot and stuff like that, and the dragon's dogma thing, it's like I really think it might just be like basically they were just taking like every Arthurian like legend kind of and like just throwing it in there. And it's kind of like, oh yeah, make it throw in the Lancelot plot, kind of thing. Because it really, the stagnant king and stuff like that feels a lot more similar to like some of the King Arthur-y stories than like Beowulf itself, right?
Well, there was a bit of that in Beowulf, but one of the things that they definitely had like a theme here was that it's like they're stagnant for a reason, like, that they failed completely, right?
It's like, it seems like,
like, cursed almost, right? Rather than, like, actually, like, some people die. It's like, no, he was cursed for doing the wrong thing, for infidelity, right? Which was, like, one of the major themes in the movie that wasn't in the books in the slightest was this notion of, like, sexuality and like how to be a good sexualizer. And like we see that with Unferth in the beginning, he's like, oh, he can't get the girl or whatever, you want to put out, and it's like, oh, look how evil he is for doing this stuff. Like, I'm not here to talk about like sexuality or anything, but it was like in Beowulf, like the book, I was like,
it's
that's not
even
like,
mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I'm part of me does, I kind of believe, it's kind of like one of those, oh, you got to have a romantic interest for the Hollywood movie, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And he then it's... Jolie totally puts butts in seats, guys.
Yeah,
really. We knew
it. we were joke, right? In the classic, you're kind of joking, but you do it because you're kind of telling the truth,
Well, I felt like it was... It was so ludicrous just how it honestly
it's
feels
so
in like your face. More budget was spent on modeling Angelina than the rest of the entire movie. Because, like, parts of the movie that were supposed to be really pivotal were so poorly done, and it was clear that they were like competent at animating. Because then you get the Angelina Jolie scene, or Jolie scene, where she's like naked, and it's like they put like hard work into it, like jerking off that sword like, today. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, I was not a fan of the movie. I'm just gonna say that right now. So anyone listening understands that I might have a, you know, biased point of view, but I did not like the movie like 10 minutes. I like making fun of the movie, and I like watching the movie.
Yeah, somebody made the joke early on that it looks a lot like the animation from Polar Express, and I just want to let everyone be aware that the Polar Express had the same director of Robert Zemeckis.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, it's the same guy who also directed Forrest Gump and Back to the Future.
Oh.
And Contact. Like, the man has a good track run with movies.
Yeah, like, honestly, the animation, once he kind of got into it, like, I liked it. You know, I enjoyed
it. Yeah, it had an interesting feel to it. Like, it wasn't good, but, like,
it was a style, you know. It's kind of like, yeah, Polar Express. I remember when I was a kid, I was like, oh, this is like ugly animation, but like, I don't know, now I kind of watch it, you kind of get into it, you know.
Yeah
Grendel
kind of like, you know, you're watching cool. The Polar Express, you know? Yeah, no, I agree, Grendel looks sweet.
Interesting, I did not care for how Grendel looked. I like, that's, it just didn't fit with my imagination of Grendel.
That's weird. I like the effort that they put into Grendel, but yeah, I didn't like the way his character was. And he was, I thought the screaming part was cool, where he's like yelling, and you know, it was a weird thing with his ears, where it's like that, like, you know, they were super sensitive, and that's why he was hearing the people from the Great Hall that was hurting him and stuff. But it just, you know, he didn't strike me as like a scary ogre-like creature that comes and snatches people at night. He was kind of like, a very crazy man child kind of thing.
That was, yeah, I mean, crazy, I guess that's kind of, you know, one of those things. Like, I mean, from the from the book, you kind of get like a sense of time a little bit more, right? It's like, mm-hmm, you know, and this, it's like Grendel shows up, kills them one night, and then like Beowulf shows up kind of by boat, you know, really quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know, from the read, and it seemed like it's like, oh yeah, Grendel's been terrorizing them for like years, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, they're like, yeah, feast in those halls, but not anymore.
We put up with Grendel killing us, like, enough already. We're getting somebody. We're gonna deal with this problem. It's been like 15 years.
Yeah.
My God.
Alright, I mean, one thing I really want to bring up is the fact that they made a liar out of Beowulf, and I really didn't care for that.
Yeah, I mean, the characterizations I thought were just awful, kind of, you know?
Yeah,
like, overall
in the book, Beowulf had his flaws, but it wasn't so much him like lying and being dishonest about what he was doing. It was, he was always doing what like he thought was best, almost even in hindsight, like due to his like blind love for like glory.
Mm-hmm.
He still like was always trying to do what he thought was best by his people, like going out and trying to slay the dragon himself rather than like getting,
yeah,
some,
honestly, like after like the whole you know, like Angelina kind of like that scene, I was just like, all right, this, I was like, oh man, you know.
Well, he was alone down there. I mean, who's to say that he wasn't just lying and the book was supposed to be like subtext, like, oh, everybody knows he was lying.
I mean, it's, in my mind, it's pretty clear that's not what the book was getting at, though.
Yeah, yeah, but I was kind of thinking about, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that, like, Hrothgar's son was Grendel, right? And Beowulf's son was the dragon. So it feels like you're supposed to, like, compare the two, you know? And they set up that same thing up with the third king. Do you think that's, like, a good comparison to make? Like, should Beowulf and Hrothgar? Does that make the story more interesting if they're compared?
I mean, I think Beowulf and Hrothgar should be compared in a good literary critique of Beowulf the book without this movie. I think this one, like, it lays on the parallels between them too hard.
Yeah, it's like making parallels, right? It's like creating them where it's like you already had parallels to play off of, you know? You can play off of just like the different forms of being a king and stuff like that rather than, you know, making up some, you know, plot where it's like, oh, look at they make the same mistakes, you know?
Yeah, I think one way to put it is this this movie did not have like subtlety to its message.
Oh, no, there's no symbolism either. I mean, it's just kind of schlock.
It's schlock, yeah. No, it's like things. It's like, as we were saying, it's like it's the Angelina Jolie scene. It's like they went all because they know it's like, yeah, the sex sells, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what I think, like, the big thing that you can attribute a lot of the problem, right? Is because this is, you know, this is 2007. This is before Game of Thrones come out, and people actually realize that if it's done properly, nerdy writing can actually be, you know, appeal to a mainstream audience. I don't know why they didn't realize that after Lord of the Rings, but whatever. So the way I look at it, a lot of the decisions that were made, it's like selling it to a mainstream audience. We got to have the sex scenes in there with the monsters. Sex sells. And, you know, we have to have a flawed character because Beowulf won't sell if everyone thinks he's, you know, not someone who's super flawed. And that was like the big thing, you know, he's a tragic kind of hero.
Well, that's kind of, I guess, one problem I really had is like, was there even a hero, you know, in the story kind of thing at all?
Yeah, it's like,
not really.
Who would Wiglaf you root for in the end?
Yeah, maybe Wiglaf. Right, you know,
if you think that he actually was seduced by Grendel's mother at the end or not.
Mm-hmm.
If he was, then I don't know. You maybe even Unferth, because at the end, Unferth is actually like, you know, he realizes what Beowulf did, and he's like, wow, that's pretty fucked up. You know, when he brings the horn back, it's like, wow, that was pretty low. And then he gets half his face burnt off.
So, yeah,
and that's sad when you have to say that Unferth, because, you know, Unferth is not a redeemable character.
Right.
That's
like
for the one
real
thing that they were. Marcus was very right before we watched. Like when we first started watching.
You got really quiet there. Do you wanna?
Yeah, you cut out.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think Marcus was right at the beginning in saying that the person who's probably truest to characters is Unferth. Like, even he isn't totally true to character, but they maintained his core element, right? And he's still not a redeemable character. So the fact that he's one of the characters you could consider to be have a good character.
He's like the only character that grows, right? And he felt like Worm Tongue to me the whole time.
Yeah,
that's a good cut all there.
But I mean, I guess overall, the big thing to say about it is it just feels like a movie, you know? If that makes sense. It very much is. Tell this scene was put in for a reason, right? You know, but yeah, I guess one thing is I do read. I really do need to just like read the King Arthur stories because I do feel like. I mean, we were saying, like, the stuff, like, with the dragon fight and things like that, it's like, oh, this is, you know, straight in Dragon's Dogma, and I doubt they just copied the Beowulf movie. I think it's more likely it's, like, somewhere else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I do, one of those does have a lot of kind of interesting ideas, kind of, like, it plays into, like, the temptation stuff like that, where it's like, you know, and so in Dragon's Dogma, it's, you know, you can either kill the dragon and actually like fight him kind of thing, or it's like you take a deal and become the king, you know, don't kill the dragon, but you know, he's like still alive and can kill you at any time kind of thing.
Yeah, it totally changed the focus. Like the original Beowulf, it's about man facing death to fight a monster, but here it was like temptation was the... You
know,
it puts Angelina Jolie at like the main villain too.
Completely different story, honestly, than like what the Beowulf book is, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I found that the core message very strange. I think really tying into what we were talking about how it's very mishmashed and like half idea, like half baked idea thrown in there, is that there's this huge, you know, I was saying there's this thing where they clearly have like some kind of shtick, which I'm obviously not against, with their message kind of being, oh, you shouldn't be tempted by adulteresses. Like, it was like a very Christian message, you know?
Right, right. Very
much like, don't be tempted by demons, you know? Like, I don't know. I thought that was really weird. That was a really weird way to go about that.
I don't think there's no cohesion. The whole thing was just like a mishmash of ideals, and you know, it's like whatever's coolest put on the screen. You know?
Well, and I honestly think that's why they contained the Christian thing in there. Going back to the idea that they wanted to sell a movie, they didn't care about telling the story at all, and that's why it feels like it's just like, oh, audiences don't want to see like hardline Catholic stuff. We're gonna put like an edgy anti-Catholic spin on it and say, oh, you know, Beowulf was. He might not have been a good guy, but at least he wasn't given into those Christians kind of thing. But then it doesn't do anything with that, because it also, in its attempt to make an edgy anti-hero, made Beowulf also an unlikable character. So you're left at this divide where it's like, the movie's clearly telling me not to like Christianity.
That's the thing. There's no, dude, like no one, right? It's like, they don't side anywhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's I mean, it was
worth the watch. That being said, I didn't like the movie.
Yeah,
it's like I enjoyed watching Beowulf do cool stuff, you know, kind of thing. It's like I was enjoying the ride. The second half, I kind of checked out at that point, but you know. But like honestly, like I thought the Grendel fight at the start was pretty cool. I enjoyed it.
Well choreographed and all that. As I was kind of saying, I mean, like, in terms of like just like gratuitous violence, like they showed me some stuff I'd never seen before. I, you know, like even in like video games, movies, you name it, it's like I was thoroughly impressed.
True, the scene where Grendel just eats the guy's head.
Yeah,
and they spent like so long showing him.
Yeah,
it's like when are they gonna cut away?
Yeah, they had a lot of those shots where it just like lasted really long. When are they cutting away, man?
But at the end of that, dude, that like quick cut where it just goes to black for like 2 seconds was hysterical.
Yeah, I think that's why the movie, I really like the gratuity in parts of it. You know, the fight scenes, it's like, what is going on? Or the scene, you know, because read about it in the book and you understand it's like a very quick when it's available. It's like, oh, well, the monster doesn't have a weapon, so I'm not going to have it. Is it? Maybe I'm just not remembering it. Does Beowulf take off his clothes too, or just his armor?
He does say he's not wearing armor. I don't think it says that he doesn't wear clothes.
Because, yeah, because I get why they had it in the movie, you know, because it's a very typical trope. It's like the naked macho wrestler guy kind of thing. But as far as I know of old Germanic culture, nothing is like naked wrestling with dudes is cool, you know? So, I mean, once again, it doesn't really matter because they clearly weren't interested in telling the actual Beowulf story, but that was just kind of funny because of how much they emphasize that he's naked. Like he's lying down. All of his friends are kind of awkwardly sitting around while he's just completely naked.
That guy eating.
Sing a song.
Right, exactly. And the entire fight scene of him being naked and them just like putting like, you know, the helmet just barely in a shot or like,
That was so funny. All the shots that are like covering his way. It's like, oh, it felt like the Austin Powers scene, dude.
Yeah.
Those parts of the movie I think were what made it worth watching for me. It was like it was funny. I knew it wasn't gonna be true to the Beowulf story because I'd heard that before. I didn't know it was gonna be that untrue to it.
Yeah, I was surprised by how bad it was. That was one of those. Yeah. I was like, cow.
So I was kind of disappointed, but then when we got to the Grendel fights, you know, like, okay, it's just like a funny movie, you know, I'll enjoy it for that. And there were some of the choreographed scenes were like pretty decent. I felt like they got a bit overweighed by ridiculousness at sometimes, like you'd be like, damn, that was cool. And it's, oh, well, that was just kind of over, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like I've watched a similar way to like the second or the last two Hobbit movies where I kind of like shut my brain off. Wacky fantasy shenanigans, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see what crazy choreographed moves that people came up with now.
Well, that's actually a really good comparison with that Hobbit movie, because when they made those Hobbit movies, they just poured in a whole bunch of graphics. Like, they tried to make it like the refresh rate was like insane, which like ended up giving people in theaters nausea that it was like that their screens just couldn't do it. So it was like flickering the whole time. Mm-hmm. A lot of this movie, what I think, because 2007 was like prime time for like 3D movies, and it's definitely apparent that this is a 3D movie. Like, there's so many scenes where the spear is like over the top pointed at you.
I think we also need to post 300. I think there's a lot of 300 influence in here too, you know?
Yeah, like
the gratuitous blood.
Yeah. Also, that might be like a lot of naked scenes, might be because of like 300. You know, and I remember came out, I was talking about like they're nude basically all the time.
Yeah, like, right. I don't know if it's a contract that they had to sign that they like had to come out with an animated 3D movie, and they like just got all these big name actors in it. So like, all right, we'll put people in the seat. And obviously that's where all that money went into, is just animating a semi-nude fucking Angelina Jolie. But I think a lot of this movie shows, like, especially like a good like porthole into the time of 3D movies. Right. Of, like, they're like prime, like, this is like, at this point they're not even following the story, they're just trying to make it look amazing on screen, and amazing in 2007, not now.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point about 300, actually, that I didn't think about. That explains a lot, because it is very similar to 300 in terms of complete disregard for the actual story, and let's just as much violence, like nudity, and the male nudity, that's a big thing too, is like, mm-hmm. 300's criticized for the entire movie, you know, shirtless, super oiled up dudes, where it borders on going from insecure, like kind of like guys who are hyper masculine because they're insecure, to guys that are hyper masculine a little bit. Like, that's what it started to feel like with 300. And I definitely got that vibe from Beowulf. They're like, oh, people like seeing naked oiled men. Maybe we can get some women, pervy women, coming to the theaters with the pervy men who want to see Angelina Jolie naked, you know?
But no, they get a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
That was just Hollywood pushing its values. Or
oh, God.
Well, I have to say, the one part that's kind of true to the setting, and they had to make it the most uncomfortable.
It's like they're taking liberty.
Guys want a cheese pizza? It's like, oh, come on.
Whoa, man, that's too much.
We have to make the girl 14, because that's what it historically was. All the other stuff doesn't matter. Put him in Roman arm.
Give him Mongolian arm, dude.
Give him, yeah. Weren't even developed until 1600. Gotta have a 14-year-old. That's classic.
Yeah, this movie just exudes postmodernism.
Yeah,
What do you mean? I guess go into detail.
Yeah, I mean, like, just the way that it's always trying to, like, subvert something, or, you know, it's never taking a stance on anything. It's just kind of throwing all these ideas around,
mm-hmm.
and never giving any of them a sense of this idea is a true idea. It just throws them around.
Yeah, it's just breaking stuff down.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't even know if they're even aware that they're just, like, making a mockery of everything that they're doing. Like, I think they might actually be trying to do cool stuff, thinking there's value in it. Ooh. And just the act of them doing that destroys value. I really think that's the case. Like,
it really grabbing stuff that's cool, you know? They're like, oh, yeah, Lance, sweet, dude, you know?
Yeah, and it's... I don't know. I definitely do think it's true that they're just throwing ideas around, kind of thing, or they do like want to because subverting is the big thing in modern cinema. It's like, but they don't understand that it's because good subversion is actually built up to and like very subtle at first, you know, where you're not going to expect it. Whereas in this movie, it was like everything was so hand-fisted that.
Yeah, dude, it's a deconstruction though of, the story, right?
Dude, the amount of times that there's burning crosses,
I'd say there's no intent. There's like no intent, but yeah, you know, there's a lot of burning crosses. There's a lot of, and they had to intentionally change the story, and you kind of gotta wonder, like, why the fuck did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I get like, oh, like there's a new audience, you gotta like change it up a bit. I mean, that makes a little bit of sense, like maybe not including like. know, obviously books don't translate to movies perfectly, but like changing it so like values around, it's like, why are you doing that? You know, like, yeah. People like Beowulf for a reason.
Yeah, I understand if they like, I understand making it all take place in Denmark and not having them go back to Geeland and like introducing a new setting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just ridiculous to change the entire values that are shown in the book.
I was even give the, like, the whole like Beowulf doing the wife thing, or the, you know, like the, you know, the, you know, like the queen thing. I was kind of, you gotta have your set, your like love interest, okay, you know, I get it. But like, yeah, the stuff with freaking Grendel's mother, it's just like, come on, that's just like, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know if they realize how I don't want to use degenerate because that's such an easy word to use, but I don't know how irredeemable they were making Beowulf's character by doing that. I don't know if they realize that, but the whole idea is that he's there to fight to fulfill a debt, which is supposed to be extremely important to him, and he does all this stuff, and then he knowingly is just like, well, I'm just gonna have sex with Grendel's mother, which, by the way, I feel like was just part of the subverting narrative, but is completely given away by the fact that they show him failing in terms of his self-control when he has sex with the mermaid lady fighting the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't know. It was very weird that they
So like that, there was that scene where he had a dream, right? And she's like, oh, husband's dead, sleep with me or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like that's, so the like birth of King Arthur, right? It's like Uther Pendragon. He's like dressed as the king on the night that he dies, or he's like, he like drinks a potion or some crap from Merlin kind of thing, and he like transforms and looks like the king, and he's dead, and then he sleeps with her, and that's how like Arthur's conceived, and it's like technically out of wedlock, and then they get married, but it's like, you know, kind of weird, but he's like disguised as another man. So I one of those things where it was like kind of weird, because I was like, what, like, this is like, you know, this is from King Arthur, but like, I have no clue what the hell's going on here, you know?
Yeah, well, that's one of those later additions, which honestly, I don't know if we discussed it briefly in the first podcast that we did, or if it was the last discussion we had before we started doing the podcast, but I have very strong opinions about King Arthur and the original myth versus adding all the knights. And I know the knights is very integral. And obviously with the popularization of the Grail quest idea from Arthurian legend, that probably wouldn't have happened if they didn't add knights in. So I understand its importance culturally, but it really just grinds my gears. They have that kind of stuff in, or like the whole Lancelot thing where they made it so Guinevere, who's supposed to be like a tragic figure, but not a completely horrible person, it's like, oh, she just basically cucks King Arthur, and they make him like super weak, and it's obviously because Lancelot is the French guy's insert. It's like, well, the French are much better lovers than British, so obviously she'd be swayed by Lancelot. And it's just, I don't know, there's a lot of stuff like that in there with all the self-insert knights that annoy me a lot, and the stuff like that, like that's not part of the original myth, that Uther Pendragon, you know, that whole thing, the illegitimate. It just added in. So, but that's, I guess that's a different.
I mean, really, the big thing though is that it's a part of the other myths, right? It's once it was added, it was picked up. And that's kind of what you go off of with these things, if that makes sense.
I know. That's what like annoys me about it though, is that when people hear the King Arthur myth nowadays, it's like they just assume of that's what it is, and it isn't the story that it is, which is like a very tragic heroic story about this guy who's fighting a losing battle, you know, and then at the end it's futile, but there's still like that ray of hope, because I feel like that's very emblematic of the,
well, I mean, so that's like, so they build off of that, right? Because that's like they start out with that, and then it's like, all right, so like we have that problem, how do we fix this actually, guys, you know? They kind of actually, right, like try to figure it out, you know.
But that's what I mean. It goes with your point that like once they, yeah, I get that they want to figure out what goes with that, and I'd be perfectly fine with it if that was like, you know, these stories spawn from it. because of what you're saying, where it gets picked up and people just assume that now the King Arthur story is this huge overarching narrative of things, you know, some of which is really cool, some of which is completely degenerate, but it's part of the Arthurian myth now, so it's got to stay.
Well, it's one of the things I kind of want to bring into notion, and I'll tie this back into Beowulf. It's like, when does a retelling become canonical, right? Because Beowulf likely went through like multiple renditions before it was written down, so on and so forth. But one could see, like, see that this movie rendition is like almost a canonical telling, right? Like, I don't see it that way, but like, one could argue that, like, for the modern era, it's like, oh, this is how it was passed down, you know?
Right, because so many people have probably watched the movie that never read the actual Beowulf story.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, or even other way around. I mean, even it's just like, oh, this is how it like relates to the modern era or so forth. You know, like, even if people know the old story.
Interpretation of what it's supposed to be like today. Kind of.
Exactly.
I
can see the old versions as incomplete.
I really see that, actually, with this one. And I think it really is a damning tale of our modern times to say that, but that's kind of how I see it, is like, you know, in my mind, you know, I'm kind of, you know, against postmodernism, so I see that, like, this is kind of our telling of Beowulf, and it's indicative of the fact that, you know, our current culture is built, like, breaking things down, like this is kind of.
Yeah, well, kind of on that, so would you say that this is an authentic retelling? That is to say, the people telling it are like,
is what, like, they really think Beowulf is?
Oh, that's interesting.
See, that's a good counterpoint, actually.
Yeah. Except
it's like, if this is what they think Beowulf is, like, we got a lot of work.
Yeah, I think I disagree that it's being told as, like, a genuine retelling of Beowulf.
But even that could be emblematic.
Yeah, society, I was gonna say, like, but, like, there's some postmodern art that, like, is like, yeah, I understand this isn't, like, what most people think of as art, but that's why I'm doing it like this. And I still kind of have a problem with that.
I guess one thing to be said about the, like, the idea, it's like, okay, so, you know, if we take it assumed that it is, you know, like, oh, this is how they see, you know, the modern interpretation of Beowulf. It, like, the movie didn't do very well, you know?
Right.
So it's like, I guess it kind of means,
it wasn't,
like,
well even, received, we should say.
Yeah, so even if it was, like, you know, even if they think that's what it is for society, I don't think society accepted it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, that is. One of the things, I think it's emblematic. I think whether it's authentic or not, and one way of looking at it, I guess, is it isn't authentic, and that it was made with, like, either to subvert it or through, like, just like
it was made, right? If it's
right,
it's authentic, you know,
right. The fact that it, like, is so shitty and, like, it wasn't made with, like, people actually giving a shit about it, it's like, well, isn't that modern society, right? It's like the synthetic creation with no love. It's like, yep, yeah, like, there we go, you know, we got our Beowulf, oh, big bad guy has a lot of sex, you know, I do think there is something to be said about that and what that says about, you know, like, do we really understand the ways of our ancestors, so to speak, in that regard? Like, can we read Beowulf authentically? And it's like, I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, I definitely agree that it's damning. However, I think I agree a lot more with Eric's point that, looking at this, do I think it's a modern retelling of Beowulf? Not really, because I honestly don't think there is a single shred of passionately trying to retell the Beowulf story authentically for the modern age. And I do agree with Eric's point that that's probably even more damning, is the fact that the society cares so little about, you know, this, what is essentially not just for people of Germanic heritage, but people who speak, who even, you know, participate in the Western world, that this is such an integral part of Western storytelling. It shapes a major way of how stories are told hundreds of years into the modern day. And for them to just be like, well, we're going to take this, but we're just going to turn it for a profit kind of thing and make a completely false, uninspired retelling of it is probably says a little bit worse about society.
Well, that's what I mean. It's so authentic. It's like microcosmic in scale, you know, like everything about it, like, grows up as to why it's such a shitty movie.
Yeah. And I think, to your point is like, can we look back to the ancestors? I think this movie actually offers a good example of that, because yes, if you don't want to put the effort in to learn and you want to go see Beowulf for whatever reason, let's say you're like, oh, I want to see Angelina Jolie, or, oh, I want to see it, but I don't want to read the story. You're not getting the Beowulf story. If you're putting in, you know, you're dipping your toes in and not doing any real effort, you're not going to get the real story. So I think the stories of our, you know, ancestors or history or however you want to tell it can be told. And I believe in the modern era, there could be a very authentic retelling. I just think a lot of times that's not the case. A lot of times you can actually read the story. And I think that's part of the reason why the story was so potent for me, is because, yeah, it's a completely different set of values than the ones I'm used to encountering or dealing with in my mind. And that was really enlightening for me. You know, it is literally a blast of the past that can't be replicated, at least as far as we know. So
kind of instinctually, you understand it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even if our society can't reflect that.
Right. It's something you instinctively understand, but it's not anything you really would have considered yourself. I mean, from when you're growing up, even at a super young age, you know about dragons and knights and the idea of the knight fighting the dragon to save some princess or whatever. But never hear the Beowulf story. And even when I read it in high school, I wasn't really reading the Beowulf story. I was interested. And then, you know, it was one of those things where I was like, eh, whatever.
The and words are in one. The other kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And I think that definitely changed when I got a, you know, better understanding of this kind of stuff, because then it's like you read it and you're like, wow, this is why there's so much in modern culture about this archetype. You know, like, this is kind of originated. So I think there's still hope, basically, for the story.
Yeah, I mean, that is something, you know, something said about, like, it being written down, right? Because it's like, yeah, I mean, the original is still out there. Obviously, it's very difficult to actually read, you know, original too, right, at this point. But, you know, it's like the fact that it was written down still lasted a pretty damn long time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I like to imagine.
A lot longer than, you know, 30 years ago. How many people remember those? Although I guess, to be fair, you know, we do have a lot of years to sort out which ones are good for us with a Beowulf. You know, how many failed Beowulf stories out there were there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That is true.
Although I imagine it was kind of different, just because if it was a failed Beowulf-esque story, then it just wouldn't get retold by people.
They take the good parts and add it to
right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I guess any last comments?
So if you want a movie about Beowulf, don't watch Beowulf. And if you want a movie that's a CGI action movie that takes place sort of like Middle Ages, don't watch Beowulf.
Well, it's kind of funny, right? Because it's like you think about it, right? Action movies. Oh man, Beowulf, that's schlock. And it's like, we're saying they should have made it action-y schlock, essentially, but like, it's kind of just more true to Beowulf, you know? It tells a different story. It's a story I'd rather see at this time, you know?
Well, and the action-y schlock that's in Beowulf is more meaningful, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. It's well done, right? There's definitely, I mean, if someone's not paying attention, I guess it seems like action-y schlock, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I feel like people say that about like Lord of the Rings, right? It's like, oh, scenes are just like, you know, action after action. It's like, oh man, like there's so much crap going on in Lord of the Rings, you know?
Yeah, mm. that was actually the exact point I was going to bring up, because I was talking to people at a party once, some of the girls on the team, and they were, you know, saying, because there were some who were like, oh yeah, Lord of the Rings is amazing. Oh, how can you like that? It's just like 3 hours of people fighting, you know? And I was talking about that, and then someone brought up, you know, someone who did like Lord of the Rings, but didn't really understand my criticism of The Hobbit, because I liked the book, even though it had its flaws, don't get me wrong. And the rest of the things had their flaws. And I was talking about that. They're like, well, how is The Hobbit really any different? But subtle difference of the action.
We lost you there for a bit.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, right after you said the difference between The Hobbit. And...
Oh, okay, so yeah, the difference between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings is that it does seem subtle, but it makes the world a difference. Is that the action in The Lord of the Rings means something, and it's going towards the goal of the story, whereas the action in The Hobbit was, let's see if I can add an epic scene where the Fat Dwarf in the barrel fights people with axes, you know. And that's the difference between a lot of action, a ton of action that actually leads to something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the thing, right? You're like the Black Gate, right? That's kind of like, that's one of those action scenes, right? You're like, oh, final battle scene, this is going to be sweet. And it's like, you know, the build up to that is like, you know, it's like, basically they realize it's a suicide mission, you know? It's ragged. Right, and that's what it is. That's what's going on here. And it's like, there, it's like, damn, this is a pretty intense fight right now, you know, kind of thing. And then it's like, there's a lot going on before you get to that payoff, I guess.
Right.
But yeah. So I guess back to last thoughts. Anyone?
I don't plan on watching this movie again anytime soon.
Yeah.
If this were made today, and you didn't know any of the actors, you'd think it was a B movie. Yeah, like something you see on Sci-Fi. It was pretty crappy in that regard.
It reminds me of I saw like The Great Wall with a buddy. That was like the last movie I saw.
Oh, Matt Damon.
Yeah, it was so bad, dude. And that where it's just like I remember sitting in the theater seeing that. And I was just like, what the hell? Like, like I paid money for this. I'm like, holy shit.
Isn't that movie about, like, bug creatures?
Ah, dude, I hardly remember. It's basically, yeah, like, alien things. Not aliens, but, you know, it's just, like, monsters start coming over the Great Wall of China, and he's, like, some bad ass. It was basically, like, Helm's Deep the whole time.
Isn't there a part where, like, the wall lifts up, and there's, like, aids in between the wall that come out? I never watched it. It sounds exactly in terms of super gratuitous, if you just want to see stuff get destroyed and have a laugh with your friends, if you're actually expecting anything about the Great Wall or anything about the Beowulf story, then try your luck actually reading about it.
Well said, Ryan.
Thank you. But if anyone, you know, doesn't have any last remarks, then I think we should end it. Max and I were notified that last time we just kind of trailed off, I think.
Yeah, it kind of just like ends, yeah.
Because I think one of us was like, do we want to play games?
And so we actually went into a discussion on reading Darkness. And so I was kind of like, well, since we decided not to read that, probably shouldn't keep that in.
Yeah. Right, yeah, you don't... Anybody calling along at home?
So it's like we went like straight into, you know,
I mean, honestly, if you just cut it off at the end of what Ryan said there, it would be pretty good.
Yeah, like I
cut it off. Want to talk about what the next episode would be.
Well, I think we should make a really annoying habit of really cutting one of us off in the middle of our set.
Yeah, well, like I don't know about that. So
okay, cut Tony off there.
Yeah. Well, no, see, the thing is, now all of this conversation gets included, and it just sounds awkward for people listening.
Well, I don't know if that's awkward, because that's
only... No, we have fun, quirky personalities, dude. They like...
I think it's more of us trying to
also,
figure out...
Jamie, can I just hear you say something? I want to make sure you're still alive over there.
I'm
I heard an I'm. That was
nice. I'm.
Yeah, I broke up. Is that a call for distress?
Yeah, Jamie, what were yours?
Oh, God.
He didn't like it. He really didn't like it.
Grendel got him in the middle of that sentence.
Uh-oh. Oh, damn.
That's he heard him scary. Having too much fun.
Damn. But yeah, I just thought, you know, I mean, we can end it where it was, but I thought maybe if we wanted a chance to kind of talk, well, pretty much plug the YouTube channel or, you know, the podcast if people would rather listen to the podcast.
Yeah, I'm...
You tell us where you want to end it. Leave that comment the down YouTube below.
Thing, so. Yeah, right. And tell us what you read next week.
We gotta get some interaction, guys. That's how you pick up followers. You gotta interact with your audience. Max is giving away one copy of Total War.
giveaway.
But guys, only if we get 500
subscribers. Go to trade in your CSGO gun skins. Use the code book club.
Have fun editing this one, Eric.
Oh yeah,
I feel like you might want to fluff the end here a little
bit. Dude, I'm gonna have to become a sick editor.
Funny. Wait, you're really gonna have to become a good editor to fix the fact that you cut out in the middle there.
Oh well,
I don't know why we would have to cut out the ending part of the podcast. Because I mean, we have our full discussion. We come to a conclusion.
People can stop listening.
About. Yeah, they can either stop listening, but we're probably going to talk about what we're going to be talking about next week.
People, I just want to make sure you know, just because it helps metrics, if you keep listening, there might be something in it for you. You can't just stop listening.
There is a secret at the very end of the podcast.
It's true. It's true.
So Max's giveaway corner.
We hold one secret idea about the thing we're talking about for the end. Yeah.
We did lose Jamie, though.
Yeah, he said his PC froze.
Oh.
Which is a shame. Well,
which means we can't end until Jamie comes back.
I guess Eric edited a screen cap of Angelina Jolie.
Oh, definitely. I'll try to throw that in.
I'll definitely add that.
But also make sure to cut out the chat.
Yeah, I'll try to start throwing up like pictures or something like that, you know.
I was thinking if we could get some art, like I don't know. I'm not a good artist.
Some good screencasts from the movie would be pretty solid. Just to like show the graphic, like
at least like pictures. Yeah, definitely a thought for sure. I think I'll do that. Angelina Jolie, definitely get some of that in there.
Of course, that's all the money. You gotta let their work be shown.
We gotta leech off of them for that. And that's the what is that? The picture that they show, the thumbnail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the one that was in all the trailers where she's coming out of the water.
Right. Oh yeah.
I think though for the parts where we don't have screen caps of the movie or the book we're discussing, I think it would be cool to have like a little banner kind of thing. I'm not saying we should.
I agree. Some kind of logo.
Try doing one.
Oh, we should get a logo. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do we want to read? Do we want to do 1,000 Arabian Nights?
You sent that link, right? That link.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm fine.
How do you guys feel about reading like Lord of the Rings?
I would be really down for that.
I'd be down.
Actually, yeah, I'd be down with that as well.
Yeah. That, yeah.
I've never read it.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, you've never
read it? Yeah. My mom loves the book, Lord. It's like one of her favorite books.
It's good. It's really good.
Yeah. She liked it more than the movies, I think.
Yeah, even I've only read The Hobbit.
Even if we choose something else over, we should definitely read it.
At some point, yeah.
I'm down to do Lord of the Rings. And then we'll do a full live stream of us watching the extended version of the comment down below if you want to see that live stream.
Yeah, dude, we should honestly record ourselves while we're watching this stuff and sell or not sell, but do what the hell is that? Oh my gosh. We do like voice wallet commentary. Yeah. Do commentaries.
Like Mr. Science Theater.
Yeah, then I'd have to figure out how the fuck I would just record from my mic and from Discord, but not from what we're watching.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe I could figure it out.
We'll get on that stream. Don't worry about it.
We have to have crazy reactions, though. Like, oh, a sealed door didn't just not throw that ring in the fire.
Oh, shit.
My God. Just be annoying. infectious the whole time.
I mean, that's basically how it was watching Beowulf, so.
Yeah. But we're funny.
Through that.
Yeah, but it's quirky.
Like Sancho.
The internet likes
Sancho's funny.
The internet does like quirky. Well, we shouldn't put our own
ourselves, dude.
Let's not put presumptions on the internet. Well, how about the internet tell us? You leave a comment down there in the comment section. If this thing doesn't get 50,000 likes, then we're going to quit. We're quit.
We are quit.
If you want us to be more quirky, you know, we'll dye our hair for a couple thousand likes.
Yeah, zany. We'll be zany, too. Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah, and actually, when we say we really mean Max.
Smash that like button.
If this gets more than 10 likes, we'll play Fortnite on stream for 10 hours.
And Max will dye his hair.
We gotta do some like super obscure charity thing, like one of the things where it's like, oh, we're doing a 24-hour marathon of us playing Fantasy Star Online for cancer.
No, it's got to be to save the black squirrels of California. It's like,
yeah.
So like a not a non-issue.
It's like, oh man,
we're here to raise money to beat baby seals
children.
To the Children's of Alaska.
They dude, there's actually a guy. So the guys from Dispatch or whatever, they like actually have a charity organization called Lacrosse the World that gives lacrosse gear to like third world like starving children.
Yeah, because they need more games to play.
It's like, come on, man.
I think there's more important things
they need, you know?
Yeah, wow.
Hey, you know seeds? Yeah, you don't need that. You need the sick ball and the sick lacrosse stick. Come on, bro. Come on, pass it.
Like, for the coffee. Oh, jeez. That's a lot of water filters, dudes.
God. I mean, I'm assuming we'll have ended it by now. But
all of this needs to stay in.
Thank you guys for listening to our podcast. Yep. Check us out next week. We'll probably be reading something. We all decide on Lord of the Rings.
I think Lord of the Rings.
We'll do Lord of the Rings.
Listen to the next podcast. Find out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we definitely aren't doing Lord of the Rings. We don't know what we're doing.
1001. That's
And tune in next week to find out if Eric has leukemia?